An Indianapolis politician is headed to prison. Will others follow in his footsteps? Tim Durham contributions returned, Greg Ballard's education plan, and Mike Delf passes on the Senate race. That, plus an Indianapolis 9/11 memorial is dedicated and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 16, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, a jury found former Indianapolis City County Councilor Lincoln Plowman guilty of bribery and extortion. In 2009, an undercover FBI operation showed him accepting money from an agent pretending to be a developer. Plowman had offered his council expertise and his years in law enforcement to move the project along. He said he was working as a consultant. The U.S. attorney says his actions were criminal.
If you want to operate with a for sale sign as an elected official on your door, the United States Attorney's Office, along with law enforcement, will identify, investigate, and perhaps you'll meet the same fate that Mr. Plowman met today.
Will others meet that same fate? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Eric Holcomb, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, is Lincoln Plowman's crime an isolated case?
I don't know the answer to that. Certainly the things that he said on tape don't inspire confidence if the practice is as widespread as he'd have you believe. The problem, it seems to me, is kind of...
You're saying that the money that he was given as a bribe could be used to influence others in public life.
Or, yes, which was what the implication of the money and the cash was. And in addition, the idea that that law enforcement will look the other way if they're given free drinks and free admission and those kinds of things. Now, I don't know how widespread that is, but this was not a case where somebody turned somebody in. This was a case where law enforcement went out aggressively to try to investigate this, which means they either suspected Mr. Plowman originally, or they suspected something else was going on. I don't know which it is, but it does point out, it does seem to me, the idea and the difficulty with having elected officials also in law enforcement. He was wearing both hats, and he was trying to sell both hats as a way of, quote, doing business, and I think that's bad policy.
Most of the reaction to this has been with regard to Lincoln Plowman and what he did and what he stands to lose. But some people have tried to make this political. They've said that Greg Ballard had promoted Plowman and that this is something that works against Greg Ballard's reelection campaign. You worry about that?
I think the only thing this proves is that lapses of judgment or unethical behavior, it has consequences. And neither side of the aisle is immune to this, but... it has consequences, and I'll have to deal with those things. So it's the exception to the rule, I believe. Certainly it's the exception to the rule in Indiana.
We've heard for years arguments about whether people who are firemen or police officers should be allowed to serve on legislative bodies. Is this an argument against that?
I think it's one of many arguments against that. I mean, several lawmakers have been very vocal in their opposition to allowing people effectively to be their own bosses. In fact, Representative Ed Delaney has been outspoken in his call for reform in that regard in recent sessions. You have it for a number of reasons. This is the most blatant example, clearly, that you could have. This is the poster child example. But then you also have situations where you have people voting on their own salaries, on their own, merit increases, it's on the structure of agencies in which they serve. It just doesn't make sense for a lot of reasons. But you're right, Jim. This is probably as visible an example as why it doesn't work and why it can be problematic.
And it happened because there's a relatively new government corruption task force here that the FBI has put in place. Do you think this sends the message to other people that you'd better behave and therefore they will? Or is this the first of what may be several stories?
It may be the first of what we see are several stories. You know, I agree that it's probably a situation that we haven't seen the end of one way or the other. If you listen to Joe Hogsett, he'll have you believe that if you are doing wrong, you will be found out and prosecuted. And I don't know whether it's part of a deeper probe into other activities or if it is the warning across the bow. But either way, it should be a wake-up call for people who are in a situation that they shouldn't be in.
I don't think there's any question about that, but they've had to put a lot of resources into the investigation of this, which means either they suspected him all along or they think it's part of a bigger pattern. And I don't think that this is, you know, necessarily a big blow to Mayor Ballard, but I don't think it helps him that he is the one that recommended him for promotion.
Well, he came over from the sheriff's department and then was elevated within IMPD. Can Greg Ballard do anything to address this at this point?
This has sorted itself out. No one's above the law, and that's been proven here. It serves as a good reminder.
Well, in the Department of Public Safety, although, as Eric pointed out, their line was very similar to what Eric just said, that it clearly is the exception, not the rule. But at the same time, they may have made a concerted effort for, what, a year now, or almost a year, to try to weed out the bad apples, because I think we can all guess that there are other bad apples in the department. You have, what, well over 1,000 sworn officers. That's in some ways a microcosm of society as a whole. You're going to have some people who are doing things they shouldn't do. And that's why I think you had the Department of Public Safety putting a new schedule of evaluations every 6 months to evaluate officer conduct. And if there are perceived problems, hook them up with a mentor or some sort of remediation early on so it doesn't perhaps rise to this sort of situation. So I think there's an acknowledgement that even though this is the exception, Let's not bury our heads into the sand. There are problems.
Well, they've had other problems in the past.
Sure.
And so this is really the culmination, the first time you've actually had a conviction.
Right.
But they have had other problems in the department.
Now to another scandal, this one involving political contributions from indicted businessman Tim Durham. Indiana politicians, mostly Republicans, got hundreds of thousands of dollars from Durham. The bankruptcy trustee for one of his companies, Fair Finance, wants the money back. After months of negotiations, that trustee has worked out agreements with some of them. Lawrence Mayor Paul Ricketts will pay back $32,000 of the $40,000 in contributions he received. The Greater Indianapolis Republican Finance Committee will give back almost $24,000 of the nearly $28,000 it got from Durham, and the Marion County Republican Central Committee will pay back most of the $5,000 that it received. Missing from the list are settlements with former Marion County Prosecutor Carl Brizzi and Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels. The governor received about $195,000 from Durham, Brizzi, $225,000. Eric Holcomb, will the governor give any of that money back?
Well, we'll see. We're in discussions right now, and hopefully it'll be resolved like these other folks have been able to realize sooner rather than later.
We need to mention, you're the state Republican chairman, but you were the governor's reelection campaign manager.
Sure.
Initially, he said the money's been spent, can't be given back. Has there been a change of heart?
It was spent. The money you raised in 2004 is spent in 2004, that election cycle, and 2008, same thing. But we're hopeful that there'll be a resolution to this, and hopefully sooner rather than later, as in the other cases.
Okay, so the governor is willing at this point to repay some money?
We're in discussions right now.
You don't want to give up your position, is it? this is an interesting development.
Yes, and I think that the groups that have given the money back are to be congratulated. They need to give it back because the money didn't belong to Tim Durham. It belonged to the investors. And to the extent that the money's out there for either Carl Brizzi or the governor, it needs to be given back. We said that all along.
A lot of this money's going to go to the lawyers, to the trustee. The people who lost their money in Fair Finance won't see a lot of this.
You know, that's the unfortunate reality of a situation like this, and it's not just this isolated case. An awful lot of money, $200 million, was really taken from these people who had invested, you know, their life savings essentially in this and then saved it in this bank, and they were fleeced. They were just simply stolen from. And then the money was redistributed in many ways, including in the campaigns that we've talked about. You know, the way the system works, they bring in a trustee. The trustee tries to recover the assets, and usually a lot of those assets are gone or greatly diminished by the time they can come back around to them. So if those folks get anything, it'll be pennies on the dollar.
Yet it's interesting that the money's coming back here before a conviction takes place.
Well, I don't know. You had the lawsuits filed. I mean, this promised to be played out with extended litigation. I don't think necessarily either side wanted to see that. You had the trustee, the bankruptcy trustee who's handling this, the Ohio bankruptcy trustee, who said that this was much, I'll paraphrase, neater, cleaner solution, wasn't protracted, didn't incur the additional cost of litigation. And I'm sure that those people and those organizations, in terms of the county party and whatnot, who decided to refund 80% roughly, I guess, of the funds, probably felt the same way. They didn't want to see this tied up in court either. So get it done.
Moving on. A potential conservative challenger to GOP Senator Richard Lugar is taking a pass on the 2012 Senate race. State Senator Mike Delf said this week that he would stay in the legislature and focus on raising his family. The Carmel Republican was considering the Senate race or seeking the 5th congressional district seat now held by Republican Dan Burton. Delf's decision against joining the Senate race leaves State Treasurer Richard Murdoch as Lugar's only primary challenger. John Ketzenberger, who does that news benefit most?
I guess I would argue that it benefits Joe Donnelly because, you know, the anticipated primary won't come off, but you still have Murdoch out there softening up the senator, and regardless, if the senator wins renomination, there'll be plenty of ammunition for Joe Donnelly, and if he happens to lose, then he's going to take on Richard Murdoch. So I think that Donnelly's really the winner here.
Murdoch also benefits, though, because this, if Delf got in the race, that would be a matter of splitting the anti-Lugar vote, right?
Sure. Oh, I think John may be right. That may be the long-term scenario and how it unfolds. But I'm tough enough for me to make predictions, you know, a month or two out, much less, you know, 9 months or almost a year out. So I'll say that in the short term it does. You're right, Jim. I would agree with you. I think it benefits Richard Murdoch because, as we've seen numerous times, when you have incumbents who have been targeted by people within their own party, let's take Dan Burton, for instance, in his U.S. House seat, if you add up the votes that have been cast in primaries in favor of the people who challenged him, they have a plurality if not an out-and-out majority of votes. But when that is splintered among various candidates, that simply serves the incumbent well, it seems to me.
A lot of reporting from Washington this week about how this makes it tougher for Lugar to get reelected. Do you see it that way?
I think this is just another example of a Hoosier elected official putting his family first. Bravo to Senator Dale for coming to that decision.
By the way, he's not running for president or vice president either.
That's right.
Apparently,
right? That's right. Wow.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I just thought it was interesting that he thought it was, he should provide a list there.
I see. Okay.
Just make the Senate race cleaner, or do you think there's potential for more candidates yet?
No, I don't think there's a potential for more candidates. I mean, people may announce, but they have no idea how difficult it is to actually qualify for the ballot. So I think that the slate is pretty much as we see, or the field is pretty much as we see it. And you're right that it does help Murdoch in the short term, and that helps Donnelly in the long term.
Okay, but Andy Horning, the Libertarian, says he may be running for Senate this week. You got a Libertarian with name ID. Does that anything for
name
Republicans?
ID.
He's got some name ID.
It doesn't surprise me.
He's got more name ID than the average Libertarian.
It doesn't surprise me. What's the line in Animal House? Every fall, the trees are filled with underwear. Every spring, the toilets explode. And generally, come November in statewide races, Andy Horning's going to be on the ticket, on the ballot.
Are you analogizing him to stopped-up toilets
I'm
or
just
underwear?
Saying, I'm not shocked.
You sound like a man who just met Morris.
Otis Day. Yeah, there you go. Tax credits are one of the cornerstones of Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard's new education plan. Mayor Ballard outlined his 5-point plan this week. It includes tax credits to education reform groups as an incentive to locate here. But the mayor's Democratic opponent in the upcoming election, Melina Kennedy, says the tax credits may be against the law.
We'll use an income tax credit for nonprofit education reform organizations located here. This credit would refund local income taxes to the nonprofit group to be reinvested in their mission.
That would be great if it's legal. I think it's unclear whether it is. But the bigger issue is after 4 years, it's one of the first times the mayor's really come out with something on education. And the biggest proposal in his plan today is questionable whether it's even workable.
John Schwanis, why is the mayor coming out with an education plan now?
Well, we do have an election coming up, for one thing.
I think it's interesting. He's been saying all along that she's talking about education and the mayor doesn't have anything to do with it. And you know, I've been a leader and I've been involved.
He says he's been doing it all along. He doesn't need to.
Tell me if I'm wrong. This looks to me like her ads are working and his polling is showing that he needs to say something more about education.
I think that may be part of it. Clearly, she has focused on education and the notion of early childhood intervention and literacy at the youngest levels in her advertising and direct mail pieces and whatnot. So sure, I think if you're the incumbent, you do want to shore up your defenses in that area and you don't want to look inactive. And even if he had done things before, which I guess you can argue he had or hadn't, whether you're Republican or Democrat, might as well package what you've done and offer a few more proposals on top of it. You know, everybody's got to have a 5-point plan.
Well,
I think there was some concern that he wanted to shore up the defenses there.
5 points. None of them really had anything to do with public schools.
You know, I thought that was an interesting part about this. I mean, I've said before, and I still believe that, you know, if the mayor wants to affect education, then they ought to go big or stay home. And this didn't even get out of the gate in that regard. You know, there's some question about whether the tax credit is worthy. You know, the idea of making this headquarters for these kinds of, that's already happening, and that's been going on for some time. If you attract more, that's fine, but you know, that's part and parcel of what you do every day. It was a pretty, shall we say, I think lackluster attempt, and I'm not sure that it'll make much difference in the end.
Seems to be. I mean, he came out with an economic development plan. Then Melina Kennedy came out with an economic development plan. She had an education plan. Now he came out. It seems to be a lot of, maybe theft is a strong word here, but a lot of copycat of intellectual material in this race.
I mean, it doesn't take you know, a rocket scientist to understand that education and economic development are big issues in the mayoral race, okay? And crime. All three of those are big issues in the mayoral race. He didn't want to talk about education because he's been missing an action in education for his full 4 years. So now he has to. Now he realizes it is an issue. So he comes up with a plan where, you know, they issue this press release and then they try backfilling, trying to explain what it is they really meant to say in that press release. Not-for-profits don't pay income tax. Okay, that's what not-for-profit means. They generally don't even pay property tax. So, you know, I don't know what that's supposed to do, but if you want to affect education, you've got the bully pulpit, and Melina's using it, and you talk about issues that make a difference in education, and that's early childhood education. Every study says that.
But from where I sit,
and that's what her proposal does.
Eric, from where I sit, she seemed up to this point to be struggling for issues. She's found a very solid issue here with the FOP endorsement. And all of a sudden, it looks like he's struggling to offset her issues. It tells me that the polls are moving.
I think we're post-Labor Day. The campaigns, to your point, are in full gear. And there'll be a sprint to the finish November 8th. And it will be in part a referendum on the mayor's record of his first term. And it's a good one that he can run on and is. And to Ann's point, I was in the State House when we had this great debate about education, right, public education, et cetera. Month after month, I never saw Melina there as a participant in that education. So she may be getting a late start.
You didn't see Ballard there either.
He actually got at least one provision entered in a key bill where the state or the city could take over turnaround schools potentially. I'm not sure he'll get the opportunity. But he's been running something of a Rose Garden campaign where he keeps saying that I'm going to run on my record. I'm going to run to my record. And now all of a sudden he's coming up with new proposals. It's a significant shift, isn't it?
Well, yeah. People look to the future as well. So he's going to offer some new ideas. But he's got a solid record to rest on.
He's got, I mean, obviously with education being as important an issue, it's and has been in the press constantly for the last few months because of Tony Bennett's initiatives on this, he had to say something on it because he has been MIA. But what he said here is too little, too late, doesn't address any of the concerns, doesn't promote anything for the future that makes any difference, and is really just, it's kind of sad, to tell you the truth.
Just to clear up the tax break confusion, even though not-for-profits or nonprofits would not pay an income tax, their employees certainly would. And what I think happens here is the amount that the employees would be taxed to go to the county coffers would be offset by a commensurate amount that would go back to the mission of the state.
That's what the backfill is.
But, well,
because first he said it was to give the organizations
even,
a tax credit.
Well, let's say,
and
if
then
that's
he realized
the way it works,
that there was nothing available.
The challenge is, I mean, do you really want, if that's what you're going to do, you got to be in whole hog, because you may get some nonprofits that advocate positions you don't like. There may be nonprofits that are wanting to dismantle charter schools. So there may be nonprofits that are advocating some other sort of educational approach that maybe the mayor and his administration seem as somehow unsavory.
Yeah, I don't think they've thought out those details.
I mean, those are what happens when you start offering fairly broad invitations for nonprofits to come to your community and get tax breaks as a result.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, should the candidates for mayor concentrate on issues other than education? Your choices are A, no, it's too important. B, yes, it's not the mayor's job. Or C, it's up to them. Last week's question was, how long will it take the state fair to recover from the recent tragedy? 80% said 1 to 5 years. 6% said 5 to 10 years. 14% said it will never be the same. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Unemployment in Indiana is up again this month to 8.7%, and the state's handling of unemployment payments is under fire. According to the U.S. Department of Labor, Indiana is a leader when it comes to making mistakes while doling out unemployment checks. The error rate is more than 43%, making Indiana number two in the country, second only to Louisiana.
It's just nuts. For the vice president to say that 43% of the people in Indiana who received unemployment insurance benefits in the last 3 years should have received nothing, and that 50,000 people now should just be cut off, is crazy.
That's Mark Everson, who is the commissioner of the Department of Workforce Development. And Delaney, how big a problem is this?
Well, it's a problem. It clearly is a problem. And it's not the first time they've had a problem. When you're handing out benefits to the people who need the most, whether it's welfare recipients or the unemployment, Indiana's track record on this has been poor under Mitch Daniels, whether he outsources it or whether he keeps it in-house. And you have to wonder, with all the state cutbacks, whether they've cut it back so far that we can't deliver essential services anymore. I mean, are we doing or not doing things that we should be doing out there? I don't think that the 43% error rate necessarily said that 50,000 should be cut off. They were saying some people weren't getting benefits that should, and some people were being overpaid, and nobody said what those percentages were.
Does this suggest priorities? I mean, if she talked about essential services, the license branches have been fixed. If this was a license branch issue, would we see this level of mistakes?
Well, I mean, that's not just it. The AAA bond rating credit improvement didn't just happen on its own. It's not a miracle. It's not magic. It was through a lot of hard work. But to your question, Indiana has a more robust process when it comes to people finding work, and we expect you to do more. And you have to fill out those forms correctly. If you don't, the feds have said there's an error. But the question goes back to what you raised, Ann, and that is, do you kick those people off? And I still question why the feds would be saying, don't make those payments. We're going to do that. We're going to do the right thing. But clearly, if there's work that needs to be done, we'll do it.
Is this a black eye?
Well, I'm sure it's one that the administration would just as soon do without. I remember how they trumpeted the when they did have the dramatic improvement in wait times, for instance, at the license branch. I mean, news release went out, and there was, you know, kind of a party atmosphere. So I'm sure this is just the opposite of that. And this is, I think, a governor who wants to be able to line up as a legacy all of the accomplishments. And so this probably is a black eye. But to your point, Jim, the constituencies here are not as don't have the voice that, I mean, you see it with
welfare recipients
and the Department of Corrections. I mean, the people who are behind bars are not the people who are necessarily being heard or people want to hear. And the same thing when you're talking.
Okay?
I didn't say it's okay.
John, will this get fixed?
It better, because it really is a management question. As Eric points out, it's a matter of fulfilling the requirements of the law. And what the federal government has said is that's not happening. And so it's a management question. You make it fixed. You get it fixed or you failed.
And this is an administration that prides itself on management above all, I would say. So that,
well, that's quickly. Their track record leaves something to be desired. It seems to me on this, more worrisome is the fact that the unemployment rate has gone up. I mean, that's a concern here. And we still owe the federal government $2 billion in unemployment as well. And nobody's addressing that to speak of. Well,
finally, we got to finish this up. You can now visit a permanent 9/11 memorial right here in Indianapolis. The memorial, which consists of two steel beams from the World Trade Center, was dedicated Sunday. It's the vision of Indianapolis firefighter Greg Hess, who helped with the rescue and recovery mission in New York City. At the top of one of the beams, there's a statue of an eagle facing east toward New York City. Eric Holcomb, have you seen that memorial?
Yes. It's a wonderful thing. It's been a long, obviously tough decade for a lot of American families, and this is a great reminder of the decades to come.
Big week downtown. Miss Victory back up on the War Memorial, and then this.
And we have the Hispanic Fair that's this weekend downtown, too?
Fiesta.
Yeah.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Eric Holcomb, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.